Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Look, if you're a bigger guy like us, have you ever bought a shirt that technically fits, but it doesn't, like, actually fit? That's why this is my favorite brand of all f***ing time. One Bone. I'm in love with everything that I put on today. In fact, I would say I've never loved a brand more than One Bone. Trust me, you guys are going to romanticize getting dressed in the morning. That's what One Bone does. Go to onebone.com and upgrade to a fit that is actually built for you. Use code Barstool for 20% off to see the difference firsthand. After one wear, you'll understand why standard fits don't make the cut.
All right, welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode something. I don't even know. What were we on? I didn't check before we did it.
It doesn't matter. Jeff's not here. Daddy's asleep. So that means the kids, we're going to rumpus in our room today.
The kids are going to play today.
Yeah, we're going to have a little rumpus room episode.
All right, we are actually, that? Okay, it's episode 309. Just for posterity's purposes, we're on 309. It's me, Ken Jack, obviously, Trill Cross. What's been going on with you?
Not much. Like, we were supposed to have Nick on for this episode, but I guess Nick couldn't do it either. And Jeff just got a lot of stuff going on. He's got a lot of irons in the fire at the current moment.
And, yeah, he's doing the draft show, and that the timing just didn't work out right. So yeah, you got You got the kids playing today. I'm trying to think of what do we usually do now? We talk about stuff going on in our lives, and the only thing I can think about is PlayStation and playing Call of Duty Zombies. But I feel like it's so uninteresting because I've just been playing it nonstop with strangers.
Like you've invited strangers into your home to play locally with you, or you've been playing online?
Yeah, like you hook up a LAN with another PlayStation. You have a little LAN party. You should bring those back.
Those sweaty early 90s LAN parties that it's because there's so much exhaust coming into, you know, the local high school gym that every young male is just smelling like Mountain Dew and Balls energy drinks.
They're all in orbits, don't forget.
In orbits. Ugh. The orbits were the things with the little tapioca balls in them, right? It was like,
yeah,
they tried to get on they tried to like get like piggyback off the bubble tea popularity without fully explaining what bubble tea was to Americans at the time. We caught on since smart. Then. We had to have the bubble tea stores actually roll out for us to get it. Maybe they could bring orbits back. I'm surprised they haven't. They probably have. They probably did one of those things where, you know, remember when Jeff
like
lined
Dunkaroos?
Up? Yeah, like Dunkaroos. Remember when Jeff was trying to get the new Coke? They did those new Coke vending machines in New York, and Jeff tried. I think Jeff actually got a can, limited time.
Yeah, I got a bottle of it. It was very okay.
Yeah, that's the way it works. So when you play Call of Duty on PlayStation 5, are you just with PlayStation 5 people, or did they patch you over into PS4 land too? Do you know
I think it's crossplay, is my understanding. Cool.
Yeah,
it's weird because every other game I play, it's like super fucking laggy, even though I'm on Ethernet connection, which is frustrating. But other than that, it's so fun. Reminds me of did you ever play the old zombies, like World of War zombies, and
no,
or any of the Black Ops ones?
No, now the first and last Call of Duty I got into is Modern Warfare 2. That was
those are the days.
I mean, that was like the game. I was in my mid-20s, you know, just your friends would play locally with each other. It was a lot of fun, big split-screen action going on. But after that, I kind of haven't really gone back to Call of Duty as much. I tried last year. What was it last year? What was the game last year?
Just the last Call of Duty called Modern Warfare, right?
And they tried, the soft reboot of the series. Tried that. I played a little bit online, but it's just tough because you get your ass kicked so easily. You log on, and then instantaneously your KD is in like 0.05 or something like that. Can't do it. I had more pride than that.
Yeah. I remember that there was one point where we were playing Fortnite in which I don't want to say we were like good, but we were like, actually, I can't even say we were like competent, but we were above average, I would say. Right.
When we were playing as a team, we always, like, once we got going there, we were winning at least like one team game for every night we played, I would say.
Yeah. We played like three or four games to maybe get one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember that was awesome. The first solo game I ever won, I'll never forget it. And then I kind of stopped playing after that. I kind of felt like I got to the peak of the mountain, planted my flag, and then slid right off of it.
Mm. Yeah. I remember vividly our first win.
What's Ninja doing these days? Oh, well, yeah. What were like? We were playing with Happy Texans?
I think it was us and Jeff. And it was, I just remember we were in the, it was like the shipping container area. That was the final circle we were in. And we were just like in a battle with a guy who was above us, and we somehow won. I don't remember how. I remember I got the last kill, but I was like my own one of two.
Yeah. I remember that now. Those are good times, man. Pre baby days.
Were you a CSGO or not CSGO, just Counter-Strike person?
I was Counter-Strike 1.4. Yeah, I was old school Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike was a lot of fun, man. It was like the first computer game I really got into because it was the one that was, you know, it was just out there, and then we got cable internet at some point, like in 2001. I got into it and played it a lot, and I somehow met these dudes who were all at like North Carolina State University, and they all had a clan out of North Carolina State University.
Oh, yeah.
I joined their clan for some reason. So I was like rolling with the North Carolina State University Counter-Strike players. Good time.
I did that with Lord of the Rings Battle for Middle Earth too. But what me and my friend did was we infiltrated a clan by just putting the clan tag in front of our names, and we started recruiting people, and like, basically, the actual clan members had to disband because we flooded the market with fake clan members. Well, that's I forgot what they're called. I think it was, it's not FaZe. It sounded like FaZe though, but we just made a giant market of FaZe, like, it might have been FaZe. I don't know.
Yeah. You punked FaZe Banks, and that's what inspired him to create a multi-million-dollar gaming enterprise.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
I was the starter of FaZe. You asked what Ninja was up to. I looked him up. He dyed his hair blonde.
Okay. Well,
in his kitchen, it looks like, no less. Like, I'm assuming he had a professional come do it, but
yeah, probably. I don't know, man. Good wishes to Ninja, but I do think it's funny going back to the whole idea of these video game houses, kind of like the Hype House on TikTok, but like all the video game. And they're not even, are they even clans anymore? They call them clans. Like, is FaZe a clan?
I think, right?
Who knew?
I don't know if they try to move away from that terminology.
Maybe. Yeah, I would say the clan's such an old school terminology, just not good terminology to begin with. But it's unbelievable how much that whole professional gaming, right? Even transcending the esports world, it's like at first the concept was ridiculous, but now it makes a lot more sense because it seems the model has been like less of like this person's the best at gaming and more so like this person's really good, but is also very entertaining. And that seems a lot more reasonable than saying like the person who's best at gaming is going to make a lot of money. I don't know why that is, but mm-hmm. If you got me like when I was like 17 and you're like, hey, dude, at some point, it's actually going to be cool to live in a house with a bunch of other dudes and be fucking playing video games all the time and make a bunch of money off of it. And this was a thing that was going to be a really cool, respected thing. I would have been very surprised.
I would have dedicated my life to it. I would have given up all hope of anything else. I would have just tried to do nothing but that.
If I dedicate my life to it, there's just something that the je ne sais quoi or whatever, like I just lack that elite hand eye or like Twitch time reaction that would actually get me to that level.
You think you can't build that?
No, I don't know. It's just, I hate to compare it to like quarterbacks, and we talk about this a lot, but I do believe there's something like obviously there, like within the brain's ability to perceive things on the fly and synthesize information in a very short period of time that leads, people like Patrick Mahomes to be the best versus, people who are drafted higher or like have, the ideal quarterback build of like 6'5" and like have all the tools and what they say. And I think that same sort of thing like applies to top level gaming as well. Is like, there's people who just have like the right neural pathways to respond to things and make those decisions a lot faster than other people just because of the, the way the synapses are firing off or whatever. So I don't know. I've always just, the way I get destroyed and just logging onto a public game of like Call of Duty is humbling, but just imagine facing somebody who's the best at that. It's no shot.
I agree with you in that. I think someone like Ninja is, I would say not predestined. What's the word I'm looking for here? But he's predisposed to be better at a game, at any given video game. Like, he's definitely better at any of that. But I feel like even when I'm playing now Call of Duty Cold War more, I notice the more I play, like, I can feel myself getting better. Like, every game I play, I'm like, I am getting better at Call of Duty as I'm playing. Like, I never feel as if, I'm plateaued. Like, my kills go up, deaths go down. Like, almost feel like every time I play.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I think they mean the same comparison. Well, I don't want to draw comparisons like physical athletes because that's a different level. But the way somebody can be good across a lot of different video games is kind of the same way. Somebody super athletic is good at all different sports. It's just a matter of like they're just generally in tune with their body and in control of their body and coordinated to be able to do a multitude of different things. And I think some people's brains are just wired that way. I think there's all like even like in not even like in video games, but I think in music. And like a lot of those other things, like, people can play multiple instruments. I think there are people whose brains are just predisposed to get that stuff a lot easier than other people. And I think practice can make up to it for a certain point, but I think there are people who are virtuosos in that regard. And that applies to video gaming, as weird as it is to compare someone like Amadeus to Ninja. But
very similar though.
Yeah. Very both similar. Yeah. Both, both, both love to dye their hair blue and wear headbands and do an anime dance or whatever.
That's true.
People frequently said that about Amadeus.
All right, so we have some news that we'll get into. First being that The Rock is going to reboot The Scorpion King. He's not going to be The Scorpion King, but he's going to produce it. I believe it is his ex-wife, who was his manager, her company, production company, being behind the banner on this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be behind the production company behind the reboot. I am a little torn on it because, number one, The Rock not being The Scorpion King kind of sucks because I feel like if this is like a passion project for him, right? Because this is like the Scorpion King was basically, it was his first big acting role. Cause then it was in Mummy 2, right? And then he got his own movie, which sucked, but whatever. They made 5 movies after that. All of them were awful, like got unwatchably bad Scorpion King movies. I don't know how I feel about him not being it, but I understand at the same time, he has much better shit going on. And if he just wants to be a producer or maybe do a cameo, that's, I understand it.
Yeah. That's a good marketing pitch, right? Like for him to come in and say, like, I'm producing this and this is something that jump started my film career and something I'm very passionate about. Like that's all marketing, right? I don't know how much he'd really mean that, but maybe he does feel that way. And they'd maybe cast an upstart the role and kind of give them the same opportunity. And obviously it would look a lot better in modern day. Honestly, the pitch would be easier for me to be interested in it if it was The Rock coming back as the Scorpion King, because it would be kind of a cool, like, full circle revisiting the role type of thing. But it's like you're saying, like, he's in a groove with what he's doing now, and like, while I do think that whole Mummy franchise deserves a reboot, and I'm talking like Brendan Fraser Mummy franchise, not the Tom Cruise one, I couldn't see him coming back to that role. But it will be interesting to see who they decide to cast and like what they decide to go with. And I mean, even if they bring, what if they just decide to bring Brendan Fraser back and just like have a cameo in this universe? I think that would be a really cool thing to do.
Get him, get Rachel Weisz, get nobody else. Cause that's basically the limit of it.
You see that picture of him like doing promo shots for Red Notice with that big old leather jacket on? Like that leather jacket, like, is almost like a smock looking jacket or something. And then he was like posing next to the Porsche, the Taycan or whatever the new electric one is, really cool car. But he's almost like half the size of the car.
What was the name of the egg that he posed next to?
The egg?
Yeah, because he had the picture. It was for Red Notice. The egg, the porcelain egg.
Cleopatra's egg.
Cleopatra's egg. That's right. It was a slim, very. They almost snuck us by us that they're going to cast Gwyneth Paltrow in this. Almost got it by us, but we're smarter than that.
Yeah, the yoni egg, the jade egg. I thought the Cleopatra's egg thing was funny because that's just. I mean, just the phrasing Cleopatra's egg. Like, you've heard about Cleopatra, right? But like, she had an egg that was really valuable.
Yeah, you ever hear about that shit?
Would they land it? Like, do you think they went with egg because there's something that's supposed to be inside it that's even more valuable than the egg itself? Like, is it an egg, but there's actually like coordinates to more treasure? Because the egg's like a very specific. It could have been literally anything. It could have been a hairbrush. It could have been a tiara.
Fabergé
crown.
Egg. Was that the thing that they went after in Ocean's 12? Is that the thing the Frenchman had to steal? Am I thinking of that right?
Yeah, I feel like you're right. I mean, that feels right. Just because the French love eggs so much, it feels like
Fabergé is such a cool word too.
Yeah, like the same word, like the hamburger is American, and hamburger is the most American food. Oofs are pretty French, and Frenchmen just cannot restrain themselves from trying to steal eggs.
Exactly.
That made sense plot-wise in Ocean's 12.
Yeah, remember Anouf?
Yeah, the West Wing / Trial of the Chicago 7 joke Aaron Sorkin loves to use.
I'm surprised they didn't use that in Emily in Paris.
Oh, poor.
Yeah, don't forget.
Amelie in Paris. Amelie in Paris. Yeah. No, let's see. Well, The Rock posted something that I found to be quite, like, I feel like we should just have a Rock subsection.
We can take a dive.
No, what it was he did his normal Terramana Tuesday thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he posts like a few videos, but like one of the videos he posted was of, it was like, oh, here it was. it was like this device that takes an ice chunk, and you push this, you push this canister down on this ice chunk, and then it
shapes,
it shapes it into a ball. And I think, like, while that's cool, like, where are you getting a big ice chunk? Like, where's that initial?
That's the first thing I thought. Because I saw this same video, but I saw it on TikTok. And the first thing I thought of was, like, oh, I have regular size ice cubes. I don't have, like, 2-inch by 2-inch ice cubes in my fucking fridge.
I mean, this is, like, a big ice chunk, perfect square. Like, is it not theoretically possible to just, like, if you're molding that in the freezer, why not just have a circular mold? Does that not work? Like, a rubberized circular mold? Or even a metal one?
I assume that that would be easier. They have those. Like, I think a... No, I've used one of those before. Where you just pour it in through the top.
So the rock has this thing. I mean, this thing looks cool, right? Like, don't get me wrong. It's the exact sort of, like, ultimately, like, it's the sharper image type stuff. Or what is the modern luxury thing that we're talking about?
Yeah,
the meltdown thing. It looks really neat. But the Rock said, like, I need this ASAP for my Terramana bar. Now I want to see this Terramana bar. Because now I don't.
Yeah.
I want to, like. I want to see the Terramana bar. Is it just three things of Terramana? Just all three vintages of the Terramana? Or is it like 50 bottles of the same Terramana?
It's going to be branded. Maybe it's on tap. Some places do that. Like, you know how in Mr. D's they has like Hawaiian Punch on tap? That's what just says Terramana on tap.
I'm telling you, man. He loves the Terramana Tuesdays. It's become my new favorite thing because... Now people, like, it used to just be people taking, like, shots of Terramana and saying thank you, but now people are going, like, the extra mile to get on it.
I know.
Like, there's a guy.
Guy dressed as Maui, I saw.
Yep. Yeah. I respect that. I think that I actually like that better because they're working for it, whereas somebody is just like, hey, it's Tuesday. I'm going to pour a glass of Terramana. Anyway.
Retweet Mr. Rock. Yeah, we need to do something. Maybe we need to get a old Goochman on that to get him to dress up like Maui or whatever and do a full dance and spiel, sing the entirety of Thank You on a desert island.
We just need to get a costume. You're welcome. You remember the costume that Kanye and Lil Pump wore on
the
SNL?
The big ones?
Yeah, one of them
the
was
squares or whatever?
Sparkling water and one of them was a Fiji water.
Yeah, for
the performance. We just need a suit like that, except it's a big Terramana bottle. And you know, like, if you drink a Terramana wearing a big old Terramana suit, you're for sure getting on the Rock's Insta.
I'm just thinking if I could possibly expense that to the Barstool accounts, just making a giant fucking Terramana costume. It's like, yeah, it's not free advertising because he's gonna retweet us, and that's giving us advertising.
I'd like to see you explain that in your exit interview.
All right, the next thing up was
$560. Okay.
Look, it's an expense account. We need it for Rock and Rock related retweet instruments.
We need the Rock to notice us.
Notice us, Senpai Rock.
Can you imagine? Next thing like, what if we ever, like, just for some reason, the Rock was doing publicity tours, and they're like, "Oh, we need to do a few like minor podcasts, or not minor, but just like, you know, not the gigantic ones, right? Like, not the Dax Shepherds or Joe Rogan's." And then he like picked us, and then the first thing he's like, "Hey, I'm on to talk about Red Notice," and we're like, "Shut the fuck up! The cheat meal, the cheat meal stuff is you're full of shit, right? You're full of shit."
Right now, if we ever get the opportunity to interview him, number one, we would definitely need to make sure that you got on it as well. Number two, we would absolutely call him out for cheat meals like that. Like, I guarantee you, that is a promise. I to all the listeners, I will call him out for that.
I will. I mean, probably like he'll just like laugh about it because he's probably very polite. He's like, no, you know, I gotta enjoy myself sometimes. And we do that thing where we just don't let it drop. We just be like, no. Pull up the video, the pancakes. So you just move them off screen. You didn't actually eat them, right?
Explain. Anyway, do you have footage? I mean, show us the rest of the cut, Rock. We don't know.
We just do the whole Zapruder thing.
Exactly. Break it down. So the next thing is that Vision has a dick and it works. Vision, the Paul Bettany character from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Many of you know him. We talked about him, last episode for the WandaVision thing?
He had an interview and he confirmed that Vision has a purple penis and it can change its density. So it shades of Dr. Manhattan a little bit. And I think this was actually a question on everyone's mind, right? Because whenever you think of like, he's like cybernetic human, immediately you think like, well, do they have a penis?
I would imagine that he would have something you like screw on, like a drill bit attachment.
A bolt on dick.
Wouldn't that be the better way to do it? Wouldn't you want to be able to separate that out just so you could select from which one you wanted to use if you were a cyborg or cybernetic or whatever he is?
So it's like difference. It's almost like we were just talking about how we both have a vault. Like it's like the different attachments to the vault, you know?
Yeah, but
like,
if you want to go for a run, wouldn't it be great just to put it in a case and then just go?
Yeah, and then you're done with it.
You don't have to worry about it till you need it again. That's the way I feel like if Tony Stark was smart or whoever, well, yeah, Tony Stark, right? When he built Vision or whoever built Vision or...
Yeah, him and Ultron. Bruce Banner.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Vision. And Ultron, too.
Yeah. They all kind of got together on that. I feel like that would have been a nice little feature.
Yeah, that would have been cool. It's weird because it is honestly every time I think of a cybernetic human, I'm like, well, I want to know now. Like, what's the HBO show? Raised by Wolves. I was watching that. There's a bunch of like, I would say like ambiguous looking android characters. And I'm like, well, I want to see, let me see the penis.
What if it just folded flush to his body, like a water bottle, straw, you know, the things that fold in the water bottle.
No, that would actually be brilliant.
That would be kind of cool.
What I'm kind of thinking of, too, is what does it exactly mean by changing density only in the context of what he was saying? Because, like, does it stay the exact same length and width, but it just is the density of a fucking neutron star?
I don't know, but you'd have to imagine that if you're his Disney handler, that would be the number one thing on your list to, like, avoid discussing to protect the brand. Be like, yeah. Look, the thing people want to know the most about Vision is what's the deal with his wiener? And
yeah, obviously.
If you reveal any information, you're killing the magic. So yeah. Just you be vague, and then he just goes out there and he gives the cake away for free.
I'm curious if he has a penis, does he have all the penis related like problems and issues? Does he get like swamp ass like in that crotch region?
Slamming it in a door.
Yeah, zipping it up accidentally in his jumpsuit. Like, you know, I'm very curious of like the rest of the, does he need Roman swipes at any point? Like a WD-40 or something?
I feel like it's just a mistake to even go there with Vision. Because that's the most mysterious thing about him. Why?
They do. Well, this is like a husband and wife show, WandaVision. So I guess it was going to be implied anyway, especially since they had separate beds in the trailer.
Yeah, but that was more of like a 50s thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the guy of Lucy or whatever.
Do couples really sleep in separate beds, or is that just a propriety thing for TV?
I think it's the latter, yeah.
Yeah.
Can he bust? Does he?
No, there's no way, dude. No, there's no way.
But why even have a penis then with density changing ability?
So it changes his oil.
Because he has the Ridley Scott android blood, yeah. Which is just white milk.
He has the milk blood from Alien.
but like not even just Alien. Everything Ridley Scott's done involving a robot, they've had the milk blood. It's just like, hey, look, it's just, they look a lot like a human, but they don't have blood. Instead, everything's white.
Yeah, but I kind of like that from a stylistic choice because that's what churned your stomach about. Like that uncanny value of being so close to humanity, but not being quite human is that big difference in, you know, the expectation that when a human gets sliced open, it's a bunch of blood on screen versus a bunch of milk. It's gross.
You pick up, what's his name? Was it Lance Henriksen who played the first android, I think, in Alien? They pick up his head and it's just like the cum dripping out of the back of his neck. It's disgusting.
Little orbs. Don't forget the little orbs, like the sensory orbs or whatever they were. I love that. That was one of the things that scarred me. Like along with the fire in the sky scene, like just the horrific things in movies left a gross impression upon me. That was one of the things. That and also
that
the
scene,
the
I'd never watched that. Yes.
The tauntaun being cut open, there was a lot of guts.
sausage casing guts.
Yeah, I'm like actually shocked they decided to show that.
Yeah, it was very. I think it wasn't bloody, and it was like again milky. I guess that's like the G-rated version of using guts.
Yeah,
they thought it was okay, but it was. I remember that scene vividly, and every time it would come up when I'd watch Empire Strikes Back, I'd be like, I'm looking away. Mm,
yeah.
And he stores him in there.
Yeah, that was smart though.
It was, but he cocooned Luke.
He said, "Get up in them guts, Luke. You gotta stay warm."
Just docking this guy real quick in this tauntaun. It's okay.
The tauntaun's still alive too, so you don't get to see. Yeah. Han just doesn't mercifully like put the tauntaun out of his yeah.
Oh, all right. So before we get to the next thing, we have an ad. This ad is for 3Chi. 3Chi, it's an industry leader in hemp-derived cannabis products. They are all made in the United States with U.S.-grown hemp. When they released Delta 8 products, they were the first federally legal THC product sold in the U.S. since Prohibition started almost 90 years ago. They use Delta 8 THC, which is a federally legal version of THC. Their effects are a perfect hybrid of CBD and Delta 9, giving it a similar buzz and all the medicinal effects of Delta 9 without the laziness, anxiety, paranoia, or mental fogginess. We talk about 3Chi all the time. I think literally out of any sponsor we've ever had, this one has come up in our social mentions to people that like we don't know that talk to us. They say like, "Hey, I got 3Chi and it fucking works. It does exactly what you want it to do without any of the side effects, without being illegal, which is a huge plus." So I mean that's food for thought if you're still on the fence about 3Chi. It leaves you feel amazing, yet you're functional and clear-headed instead of lazy and paranoid. 3Chi just isn't the best Delta 8 in the industry. They invented the industry. 3Chi's Delta 8 is 100% hemp-derived, federally legal, and available on 3Chi.com. That's the number 3CHI.com. And at select retailers around the country, you must be 21 to purchase. Hear that? 21 to purchase. I know we have a lot of 15-year-old listeners, right?
No. It's not for you. You got to wait 6 years, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Don't be stupid.
We did it. We waited 6 years.
Exactly.
Maybe more if you're older. Went around when I was 21. I had to wait a little longer. So, hey, kid, you can wait a little longer.
Don't be a little bit. You don't know what we had to go through.
Don't be a dumbass. Yeah. Yeah. Don't be a dumbass.
Go to 3chi.com. Again, that's the number 3chi.com to shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. Use code CAMERA at checkout to get 5% off your order. Again, you got to be 21 to purchase. Don't fuck with us on that, all right? Not kid. Fucking with you right now.
Got to be 21, kid.
All right, next thing up.
What if we did like a Mean Joe Green thing? Like, what would we throw back at the kid? Like, they just saw us leaving the podcast building.
Balls energy drink.
And they're like, "Hey, Jeff Lowe." And Jeff Lowe would be like, "Hey, kid, catch."
All?
And it would be like a t-shirt with the Baker Mayfield face with the headband on it.
It's rolled up. Damn.
Thanks, Jeff Lowe. Thank you. He's like, "Yeah, I can't wear it anymore. I lost a bunch of weight."
Oh, okay. Thought you were just giving it to me because you're being nice.
Because it's extra. Yeah, it wasn't even a generous effort. Tom and Jerry trailer. They had a trailer. We talked about I feel like this movie's been in production a while because I remember us first mentioning a long time ago. A trailer for the live action Tom and Jerry came out. It's weird. It's very, I don't want to say like off-putting, but it's just, it's strange. A lot of people I know, at least when I posted on our Instagram and we had on Twitter and all that, this does not need to be made was the general sentiment. I kind of agree. The one positive I took away from this is that at least they didn't talk. You know what I mean? Like at least they didn't change that about Tom and Jerry, like make them talking characters. Because I was very afraid of that, but I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought the animation looked good. I do feel like there's it's kind of like the better the animation gets, the more off-putting and I'm talking about like cel-shaded animation, not CGI.
Yeah.
They're like, they are not, you know, 2D animation right now. So, but like the more off-putting it looks when they put them in real world environments. Like there's like, I feel like Space Jam, the film quality and like just the quality of like how it looked at the time with like they blended in fine because it wasn't extremely high def, but there was something weird about the Tom and Jerry characters being high definition and seeing them in this environment. But other than that, like I thought they looked good. The it was cool how they're very true to how I remember the cartoon being. I don't expect this to be very, very, I don't expect it to be good. I'm not expecting much. Are you? Like, you can't be expecting much out of this.
And I'm honestly, I don't want to put a preemptive call out there, but I think this is probably going to end up being a bottom 15 movie of the year for us as a unit, which, I mean, not exactly. We've seen a ton of movies, but I think it's bottom tier movies, like that excellently bad movie tier.
Yeah, hold on. I'm pulling up. And it's, yeah, the like, you know, Chloe Grace Moretz, she looked kind of disengaged in this trailer.
Yeah.
And I think part of that's just, it's hard to act against like nothing. A dude wearing a picture of Tom on his face. Yeah. They got like one of the caterers.
Andy Serkis.
Just like, yeah, yeah, actually. Yeah. It's Andy Serkis plays Tom Andrew, and he wins an Oscar for it.
I mean, it's got an interesting enough cast, right? Like,
well, Rob Delaney's in it. I find Rob Delaney to be very hilarious. So that's the only thing I'm excited for. And I like Ken Jeong, even though I don't really get tired. The only time I've ever been tired of Ken Jeong is, and I hate to say it, is a stand-up special. Not a great stand-up special.
I never listened to it. It wasn't good.
It's just not. It's not. He's capable. He's capable. It's like he's trying to be. I don't know. He's very. I think he's very naturally. He's got a natural charisma, and I feel it plays well off of other people, and not so much in like stand-up. Stand-up's very hard to do. I think there's probably only like maybe 30 people who can do stand-up well right now.
Agreed. I actually haven't watched a good stand-up, I feel like, in a decently long time. Except for like Sparks Chappelle, but yes, this is Chloe Grace Moretz, Michael Pena, Rob Delaney, Colin Jost. Fuck you. I hate Colin Jost, dude. Why? Every time I look at his face, I think he's like the white bread human being. Like, he's so remarkably just above average. Like, I can't explain it. He's like the guy in Idiocracy, like Joe Cool or whatever, where he's just the average mark on everything, and he's on a crappy SNL couple seasons now. He's not particularly funny. He's married to fucking Scarlett Johansson. It makes no sense in my brain. I dislike him for that reason alone. It's pure jealousy, but still, I just dislike him for that.
I think he's fine. He has that like handsome Harvard guy look.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He looks like a handsome guy who went to Harvard. And I don't know how to explain that, but there's Francis, right? I thought Francis was a very handsome guy. But I look at him and I go, he went to Harvard. He's the handsome, like the Winklevoss, model Harvard guy. And that's the biggest, hey, Colin Jost, I think you're a handsome man. Take that, bitch. That's the biggest knock I have against him.
It's hard. It's like he's plain Greek yogurt as a human being. Like, I don't know how else to explain him.
What am I? I'm the juice at the bottom of the yogurt. Like when you get the big tub and then like you eat a little bit of it and you come back and then the yogurt juice is in there. Like, if he's the yogurt, I'm just the yogurt juice.
Yes. Like, again, it's insulting him from a lower position for us because we're not as handsome as him. Yeah, but at the same time, like, we can punch up.
We're punching up.
It's fine. And so this comes from Tim Story too.
Hey Colin, I hope you're happy going to bed tonight with your millions of dollars being married to Scarlett Johansson, being the head writer of SNL. I hope you're real happy.
And I'm sitting there watching Don John for the 50th time.
Well, guess what? You're in Tom and Jerry, and I'm not. Who has the last laugh?
Exactly. Well, that's literally it. But you see, that's the thing. He can't hurt us no matter what, because we can make fun of him for that all he wants. There's nothing, not shit, he could say to us. He's fucking, that's what I mean. We can punch up. The next thing, Wonder Woman 1984 is going to go directly to HBO Max on Christmas Day. It's not going to cost money. It's going to be free to stream. We talked about it, obviously, how this was going to be a huge, domino for all those movies, the blockbusters that everyone has saved up. And they kind of hinted, not even hinted, they rumored this for a little while too. But this is obviously huge. And Warner Brothers, I don't want to say they're fucking with other people's money, but they definitely now set into event. Like a lot of other studios are going to have to kind of follow suit in a sense. They don't have to, but it's going to now add a lot more pressure on them to have to do that.
Yeah, it just might also be their perspective on the resolution of COVID, or at least how far off they think any sort of major population return to a movie theater might be, right? Because, you know, things are rough right now. They're going to continue to be rough through the winter. Then we get into springtime, you know, there will be hopefully a vaccine release, but then the logistics of getting it out is going to be a thing too. And so, you know, there are going to be people willing to go to the theaters, but again, it's not about who's willing to go to the theaters, and not about some people. It's about, like, what do you get? What point does a critical mass feel comfortable getting back? And yeah, I think some of them are just doing the decisions to say, like, you know, either we punt on this now or we punt on it later. And if we punt on it now, then we have more information about where to go with it. If we punt on it later, we're kind of holding our cards till then. I don't know, though. I still kind of see, like, for Wonder Woman, and this is, you know, maybe why I don't work at a movie studio. Like, I'm happy they're releasing it on HBO Max because I want to see it. But I still don't see, like, I feel like if you held this, people would still go see it, right? Like, if you held this to September 2021, this is still a major movie that people would be, you know, wanting to go back and see. So there's other things at play that I'm probably not smart enough to figure out, or I just don't know. But at the end of the day, like we talked about last time, I'm just happy to get a new big old movie that's not Mulan back on, back in front of my eyeballs.
Yeah, I think for us, it's like, it's bittersweet because we're consumers and we want to see more content. We want more goddamn movies, like we said 1,000 times over the last few weeks. At the same time, it bodes poorly for theaters, which we love and want to save. So it's tough to kind of reconcile those two desires, I guess. But I'm excited to see it regardless. I mean, that's a good Christmas Day gift. And I think a couple other movies are releasing on, not a couple other, actually a lot of movies are releasing on Christmas this year. So I'm excited to see it. We got a lot of content coming out in December. I think it's going to be good. I love the 80s vibe. I love the trailers for it. I except with the exception of Cheetah, but I think that she's going to look better once we see her in the actual movie. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how every other studio kind of reacts to this now. But it's good for HBO Max, man. They're going to drop the literal biggest blockbuster to be dropped during COVID.
Yeah. And at a time, is HBO Max, can you get HBO Max on the PlayStation 5?
So when I got my PS5, I had to basically hook up both of them to my LAN, to like on a LAN connection. And it just transferred everything over, like all my data over in like 10 minutes. And it transferred over all my apps. Like, so every app I had on there went over.
So it's on PS4 though, right? Like, you can use HBO Max.
Yeah, I had it on PS4, but I had it on my PS4 and it transferred over to my PS5.
So really the only holdout's been Roku and maybe of Amazon Fire or whatever's going on there. Yeah, I mean, it's always smart to, when there's a device that makes its way to a TV that maybe doesn't have HBO Max yet that could have HBO Max, it's also smart to give people an incentive to sign up for said service. So that's, you know, it's the user base of PS5's probably not big enough to justify that, but who knows?
The weird thing is, too, HBO Max has hands down the best catalog of movies by far, by like a million miles. But like, not all of them are ones that are generally. It's hard to explain. They're not necessarily popular among like maybe younger crowds or something like that. Like, their Turner Classic Movie Collection is insane. I don't know how many younger people that draws in.
Yeah, so like the way I found myself like using the apps, and this is, I know we talk about streaming on a weekly basis, but I've like found it consistently that Netflix is kind of like, I really only go to Netflix unless I'm picking something for my kid to watch, or there's like a destination show that I've been told to watch, like The Queen's Gambit. Disney's Mandalorian and HBO Max is kind of like the one I go to when I'm not sure, like when I'm trying to go to bed and I got my headphones on and I want to watch something, but I'm not sure. Like, HBO Max is kind of the one I'll go to where I'm just trying to fuck around and find something to like drift off to. And like, you know, I'll finish watching it, but like, just because the catalog's so big, there's usually always something to pick from. With Netflix, I feel I feel overwhelmed sometimes because like some of the stuff's kind of what I want to watch, but a lot of what he suggested is like the Great British Baking Show, which I'm sure people love. It's just not my thing.
Great show, yeah.
I don't know. And then Hulu is just sitting there fucking pounding its pud, as Joe Buck would say.
I use Hulu for shows. So I use Hulu primarily for TV. Like I would watch Bachelor the day after on that. I would watch reality TV is all over that. A lot of other really good TV shows, like the Brooklyn Nine-Nine's on there, American Dad, Futurama's on there. Like a lot of shows that I really like and that those are like my go-to-sleep shows. They're all on Hulu. So I use it for that. Netflix is, I agree with you and everything you said about it, but, and I wish there was an easier way to navigate it because I feel like they push so much of their shitty stuff to the top and don't give like maybe other stuff time to shine. Like Ocean's 11 was on there for a little bit. It wasn't even on like a banner page for like blockbuster hits or something. Like Battle Los Angeles was. It makes no fucking sense, but I'm not in charge there. So I don't know. That's, we'll have to talk to Tim Netflix about that. All right, we have other news items, but before we get to them, we're going to talk to you really quick about Faherty. One unexpected side effect from this year. It feels like fashion is over. You know, I don't know about you, but I don't even know what the trends are nowadays, which is a true fact. So how are you supposed to know what to shop for right now? Do what I do. Don't buy for now, buy for forever. You can get a timeless piece that can last a lifetime of wear with Faherty. They make high-quality, comfortable clothing for life, and they're sustainably minded. They design products with a thoughtful focus on fabric, and every piece is guaranteed to last a lifetime. Guaranteed! Faherty is committed to the community and the environment and all that they do. They've regularly donated to the Surfrider Foundation and 1% for the Planet. It's run by the Faherty family, and they are very hands-on ensuring that everything they do lives up to their values. They sent us some stuff. I got this jacket there. It's almost like a, I don't know what the style is called. It's like a fleece. It's a fleece. It is so fucking comfortable. And like, I put it on before reading their copy. This is like months ago. And I put it on and I thought it was just regular standard material. Knowing that it was like recycled material, like blows my fucking mind because I don't understand how they even get there because it's that comfortable.
I didn't receive anything from them, but I do own Faherty clothes. And my favorite thing is their ponchos. Ponchos rule. I love them. It's like the ultimate, like, I'm just going to throw this on look.
Hell yeah. I need a poncho. Damn. Dude, I'm going to buy a Faherty poncho.
I think it was their Baja poncho or something. I have like a striped Baja poncho. It's sick.
Shit. I'm going to get that now.
Dude, you got to get a poncho.
So the Legend Collection really is legendary. It is the softest and coziest shirt I've ever worn. It's a good thing the quality stands up to everyday wear because I want to wear it every day. Buying forever is the smartest way to shop, and now is the smartest time to do it. Right now, you can get 25% off your next Faherty purchase when you go to FahertyBrand.com/lights. It's Faherty, FAHERTY brand.com/lights for 25% off. FahertyBrand.com/lights. All right, our next item up, there was a new mini Snyder Cut trailer, and the big thing we all want to talk about is what Steppenwolf looks like. I saw him, and I don't even know what to think. It's weird.
He looks like a Demon Souls boss. Dark Souls
doesn't
boss.
He? Video game is the first thing that came to mind. I was like,
it looks like a video game. It looks cool. Yeah. It just looks like a video game. It doesn't look like a movie, and I think that's a bad thing for a movie. So it may not be done. It's definitely bad. I mean, here's the thing, though. Like, they're making him look a lot cooler and meaner. The original movie I saw, he just got the shit kicked out of him by Superman. So yeah. I'm assuming he's going to do more than that, maybe. Like, maybe they'll make him a little more menacing and actually put up a fight in the Snyder Cut. Who knows? But if he's donning that cool armor, that new armor, the new video game armor, and he just proceeds to get his ass beat in by Superman again, what's the point?
Yeah, it reminded me of like an Elder Scrolls bad guy or some sort of Bethesda. It had a very Bethesda feel to it.
Oh, yeah, like a Morrowind.
Yeah. Very much like that textured feel to it. I don't know how else to explain it.
Well, just a repeating texture is like a very Xbox 360 type feel. It's like it's nice texture, but we're using it over and over again.
It's very, it's odd. I don't know what to say, but this could be obviously going to be a miniseries, not a pure movie, which I think works in Steppenwolf's favor just because we get to develop him more instead of, like you said, just seeing him get his shit kicked in by Superman after beating everyone else's ass effortlessly until he showed up. So, I don't know. I still have very high hopes for Snyder Cut trailer, and I am very pumped that they broke it up into a miniseries.
I do like how we get to see maybe four inches of his face.
Yes, at most.
That's what you want out of armor, though. I mean, that's comprehensive armor. It is protecting exactly. A lot of his body and face.
Exactly. No, I completely agree.
There really some dialogue. He goes, "Hey, Supes, why don't you come with me on a magic carpet ride?"
Yeah, saying Kieran Hines' voice.
It's like the band Irish Brogy. Get it? The band Steppenwolf?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm just making sure.
I picked it up.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
The next thing up, Spike Lee is making a musical. Spike Lee. And the musical is about Viagra.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know if you saw this one. So he is – it's directing a movie that's based off of, I want to say it was a Vanity Fair article. It's going to be about the conception of Viagra at Pfizer. And it's going to be entirely musically based. And Spike Lee is not like a stranger to musicals. He's done stuff like in that – even like a musical adjacent stuff. And like Chirac was I would say it's a musical. Like he's done stuff like this before, but at the same time, this seems like a pretty hard project to do. Get it?
Yeah. I think.
See, I did a Steppenwolf to you.
It's a bit of a stretch.
Well, he's really growing into the role, they said. He's growing into this show.
Oh boy, I don't know. I don't really want to keep going with that because I could, but I don't want to. It's you know, I think like a movie about the conception of Viagra would be pretty interesting, right? It's ultimately one of those things that is. You think about the pharmaceutical industry as a whole. Like sexual health is important. So I know there are people who are like, oh, you know, they prioritize boner drugs over, you know, other drugs. And like, I can't say that with any certainty, but I do think it's helped a lot of people. So I'm not going to write it off, but I certainly think like talking about Viagra in a professional setting, you know, when you think about like kind of the rise of like human resources and like, you know, what to say, what not to say at work, it's like, how do you talk about that in a marketing meeting, right? Like you got to cut to the chase. You got to be like, look, we're trying to sell boner pills here. There's no way around that. Like we cannot use other language other than the fact that we are selling these pills to give people erections. So
I wonder if there was a term, like, you know how like basically everything else had a different term in like the turn of the century than it does now. Like erectile dysfunction had to be a newer term to help with that sort of marketing. Like in the early 1900s, they called it like, I don't know, rotten dick.
I've got the slouch cock.
I got the dick rot. And they just give you like methamphetamine to fix it.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
You it was the horse surgeon gave you an injection of like some berry extract and mash. And barley in like straight into the base of your wiener, and that was like that was the attempt.
Like, that will get right through your urethra.
I'll get rid of the old slouch cock.
But, yeah, the dick rot slouch cock. There's got to be a better one. What do they call it? Sorry, go ahead. I'm gonna look it up.
No, I don't know. I don't know what Spike Lee like musically. Like, what are you gonna go different genres of music? Is it gonna be like Broadway type music? It's interesting. I'm very intrigued by this project. I wasn't paying attention to the news, but I find this to be quite fascinating because, like I said, like the conception of Viagra in terms of like that having to be discussed in a professional setting, and like that's all has fascinated me.
I looked it up. And I feel like I knew this already, but they used to just call it impotence.
Oh, well, yeah.
Like, duh, right? But at the same time, I feel like it's not kind of the same thing, but I guess it is.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like there has to be a more folksy name for it.
Yeah.
Like, there's old Gus. Thinking. Old Gus, his penis doesn't work. He's got...
I swear, someone must have said dick rot. Like, I'm almost positive. That sounds so right. Penile biothesinometry.
I just thought your dick was haunted by spirits.
You need to pray. You need to eat more sugar. All right. We're going to go and do our On the Rocks review soon. But first, we had an interview with Josh Dumal, incredibly handsome man, very interesting takes. He told us some stuff. We were talking about acting against a green screen earlier, talking about the guy who was in fucking Transformers. So who knows better than him? Also, a very funny tidbit at the end involving our Stool Streams Jenga tournament. So here's Josh Dumal.
We're joined now, Josh Dumal. I would say how you're doing, but I'll tell everyone what you just said. You said you've been in a hotel for 3 weeks now. That's quite the lockdown there.
It's like a human experiment is what it is. So I'm shooting this movie called Blackout here, and the only way you can really do anything these days is by, you know, creating your own bubble. And so what they did is they rented out this whole hotel. They built an entire set on the 7th and 8th floor. And then the crew and the cast and everybody else and the staff at the hotel, we all just stay here. So that's literally what we've been doing. And it's actually been fun, believe it or not. I thought that it was going to be a nightmare, but, you know, we've got a great crew and it's been, you know, pretty fun actually.
I feel like you're going to eventually have a movie or show like down the road and you're going to be like, man, that was pretty nice. That one time I got to leave set and walk down a flight of stairs and I was just done for the day.
Yeah. That's pretty much it's like living in a dorm combined with prison combined with a movie set. It truly is a human experiment. Weekends. So we work 6 days a week. And then on Saturday night, we work like a half day Saturday and we have all day Sunday off. So Saturday night, they do this thing called Jim's Bar downstairs. We have this parking lot. And, you know, you got ping pong and they've got karaoke and got tequila, of course, which I'm still recovering from. My birthday was on Saturday.
Yes, happy belated
birthday, yeah. You know,
so anyway, I'm a little, if I sound a little foggy, it's because I am.
Understandable.
You have a new movie coming out, directorial debut on November 24th. That has to be a pretty cool little milestone landmark. What can you tell us about Buddy Games?
So this is a story that my buddy Bob and I came up with about 4 years ago based on something that we do every year called Buddy Games, where a group of our closest friends, since like kindergarten, and then a few that came along the way, it's just a weekend of, you know, games and debauchery mostly. And every year we look so forward. It's like Christmas. So guys, we know that it's going to be the third weekend of August, and it's one of those things you just cannot wait for. So we had this idea about writing a script based on that. Now, the movie is a much more heightened version of what that is, but the idea is the same, that, you know, these guys who are, you know, mid-40s now immediately revert back to their 16-year-old selves as soon as they get together, which I'm sure you guys could probably identify with.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So that's what we do, is we get together, and this movie is about friendship. It's about brotherhood. It's about how these friendships become that much more valuable as you get older. You know, and there's fractures that happen along the way, and this movie sort of deals with a falling out between these two dudes, and it's a ruckus, outrageous movie.
Yeah, that comes out on digital and on demand DVD November 24th. We're excited to see a great cast. Love the concept behind it. We want to talk about some of your other movies as well, including Transformers, because we are obsessed with the Michael Bay experience. Okay. Because so many different actors describe it a different way. What can you tell us? Was it anything remotely comparable to anything else in your career?
Working with Michael on those Transformers movies?
Yeah.
No, that's definitely different than anything I've ever done. And I don't mean that in a bad way. The guy I love the dude. He's truly an original. I learned a lot by, you know, working with a guy like that, because I've done movies like that and I've also done tiny little ones. So that was, that helped me to sort of see how a Michael Bay would shoot something and how I have to shoot it given my, you know, tiny little budget. So to work with a guy like that, yes, he can be a maniac, he can be a screamer, he can be all those things, but you know what, he really is a sweetheart at the end of the day. So, you know, he's not as bad as I think as people say he is.
I think my big question here is that we always hear Transformers is always used as like kind of like a scale comparison, right? They're like, oh, yeah, this is not a Marvel, a Transformers of stuff. Like, it's always thrown in there. But then you've also, like you said, you've done smaller movies, and you've done very personal movies that are very successful. Love, Simon was the year it came out. I forget the year. It all blends together.
18, but right, yeah.
A surprise of that year. Such a fucking fantastic movie, spun off into a series online. Is there something besides like money, budget, scale, robots? Is there something though that maybe as like us as viewers don't know the difference in between like those two types of productions, a Transformers versus like a Love, Simon?
Well, the biggest difference between those two is the amount of money that they have to spend on them. And I'm of the party that thinks that you don't have to necessarily have all the money to make a great movie. You just have to have a great story. You got to have the right director. You got to have a cast that's fully invested. And you got to be creative if you don't have the money. You got to come up with different ideas. I can't tell you how many times just in my situation of directing, we had to reimagine things that I wanted to do, and then what's the reality of it? And in a movie like Love, Simon, Greg Berlanti, who I've worked with before on a movie called Life as We Know It, has a real sensibility about that human, just the human nature and understanding the humanity of something. And that I think is what makes a movie like that really work. When you get a movie like Transformers, it's all about the visual, it's all about the show, it's all about the you know, the ride. And so they're just two completely different types of movies and two completely different ways of making the movie.
What's the set like that for a movie like Transformers, where so much of it is computer animated? And like you said, so AV is such a ginormous component of that movie. Like, how do you act against that?
You know, I felt like a tiny little cog in a giant machine on that movie, but I would sit there and just watch. It was such a spectacle to see like these giant explosions. You'd have two helicopters flying around. One helicopter was filming the other helicopter, and they're coming right down close to this giant gimbal that they built. It looks like, I mean, I could just go on and on about all the crazy toys that he gets when he shoots a movie. It's unbelievable. So for me, I just sat and watched that. You know, I knew that I was just one tiny little piece in this big thing. So for me to just, and you just kind of have to sit and wait for your turn, and then you go. Where other movies, you have more of a, you know, you have more of a part in the making of it.
What did you think of, and this is one of our favorite scenes, I believe it's from the second Transformers movie. What did you think of the scene where they show the Transformer with its giant balls?
That was a point at which I felt like we maybe jumped the shark a bit. Oh man, I was like, really? Really?
John Turturro was one of our first interviews, and I think we asked him about that as well. We're like, you had to hang out underneath the big
giant balls.
Robot balls. I will say this too. I wanna throw this in there. When we talk about career challenges, you act in soap operas, All My Children. That to me, from someone who doesn't act, I feel as though that has to be the hardest type of acting. The consistency of how much you have to act, yeah, on a soap. Where would you rank them? You have big budget, besides directing, because you already said that was the hardest thing in your professional career. But like big budget, you've done big budget TV, you've done small movies, but soaps, like, is, yeah, that up there? Is that the toughest because of the day-to-day thing?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, that was my first job, was All My Children, and it was like boot camp. For a young actor trying to make his way, it was like one of those, because you literally, they shoot an episode a day. It's like 60 days.
It's insane.
So they shoot very quickly. You got to memorize a ton of dialogue. You only get one or two takes, probably just one take most of the time to get it right. So yeah, you're right in that it is really, you just got to be on point. But you know, those guys are like machines. Those the actors on those shows, they just have such a great memory. They can, and for me, having never memorized, you know, I was really, really green when I started there, so it was really hard for me to remember all that stuff. So I developed all these techniques on how to remember my lines, and I'd have nightmares about forgetting and, you know, going fucking blank right in the middle of a take. So yeah, it was tough, but it was also a great place for me to learn. You know, it was a great place because you understand lighting and, you know, you're blocking and, you know, media on a smaller scale. Everything is a little bit smaller scale, but it's a great place to learn.
I grew up, my mom watched Young and the Restless when I was growing
Mine
up.
Mine too.
Like, Victor Newman, like Eric Braden is like, that's just, he's in, and like when she told me one day, like when I was younger, like they just do this every day. I was like, that's insane. That's
so funny. Does your mom still watch it?
Not as much anymore because she used to work from home, but my grandmother still watches it. If I call my grandmother, because she lives in Florida, between 1 and 2 p.m., I get a very quickly like, hey, I'll call you back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. My mom was Young and the Restless too.
So what do you prefer as far as experience between TV and movies? Because I think we've talked to a lot of actors. Some of them prefer TV because you get the opportunity to flesh out a character over a longer space of time. And, you know, you get to get into that character more. But they also, some people prefer movies because in TV, you're just constantly on the verge of, oh, my God, are we going to get canceled next season? Oh, my God, am I going to have a job next season? So where do you fall on that?
Well, there's a couple of things that sort of come into play. The one is where is the TV show shooting? Because if I have a son that is hard to get, I don't like to go away for too long. I mean, even being here for these 3 weeks has been tough. I've never been away from him for that long. So if I'm shooting a TV show in Los Angeles, it would be much better than shooting one in, say, Vancouver or wherever, just because of logistics. But as far as what I like to do, you know, if we're talking just about acting in it, I would say probably movies, because there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you can kind of shape the way you want to tell the story. Where on a TV show, you don't, like you said, you don't really know when it's going to end, so you don't really like how does this play out ultimately.
It's an interesting answer. Actually, I really like that. So another show you're in, Las Vegas. That's like my All My Children, because I would just sit there on TNT. I didn't even watch it on NBC. I watched it on TNT when it's syndicated there. I watch this show so much.
What show?
Las Vegas, sorry.
Oh, really?
I loved Las Vegas growing up. Like, me and my brothers would watch it.
You love those girls.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Those low-cut blouses.
Those mid-2000s, what do you call it, low-cut jeans. It was great. So the one guy, a character I loved in that show was James Caan. Is he as grumpy, maybe, offset as we all imagine he is because of his on-set persona in every movie?
Yeah. But it's similar to Michael Bay in a way that he has a reputation for being that guy, but truly one of the sweetest dudes you'll ever meet. He's one of those guys that shows up every day. He's always got a story about somebody's fucking him over here, or these fucking people over there. You know, he operates best in chaos. So he likes to create like stuff. When everything is nice and copacetic, he gets a little restless. But man, I learned a lot from that guy. You know, I learned, and it was always, because he'd done so much and he'd been in the business for so long, we'd do a scene and he'd be like, Josh, come over here for a second. And I'm like, oh God. And I knew that I was going to get a little tip on how I could improve the scene, but it was helpful, you know, and I still use a lot of those things that he told me. You know, for those 5 years we did that show, Jimmy is one of the most original. He's a purist in the sense that he just acts before he thinks sometimes. You never have to worry about Jimmy telling you the truth because it's exactly what he's doing all day.
That's great. I love when that's confirmed. I love when your notion is, we already mentioned Love, Simon, and I know, followed you on social media, I know that's a movie that you just have absolutely appreciate just being in because it was so well received. It's continuously still well received.
Thank you.
And obviously the story on top of it, LGBTQ, just a story like that, you have to handle it with nuance. It has to have a certain touch to it that connects with people who can relate to the story. And on top of that, it's a coming of age movie, which is it's almost a nearly impossible thing to make and be perfect, because whatever myself and Ken Jack may have related to 5 years ago, that coming of age for the new generation, it's totally different. They like different things and they grew up with different things. But that movie, it hit and it worked so well. And for you, someone in it and playing such a big role, why was that the case in your eyes?
Why was that movie so well received?
How did it, what was it, do you think, that was, it was really able to connect with younger people?
I think that Greg Berlanti is just a really, he's got such a great sense of humility. You know, he really understands the nuance of characters. He never gets too schmaltzy or too heavy. He keeps things light, but he still is able to get across important messages. And I love that. But I mean, again, this is a dude that is just one of the nicest guys I've ever worked with. And it comes through in his work, in his films. And I think that that's it. I think that people can tell, people aren't stupid. They know when something is authentic and when it's not. And if you try to push something like that too hard, and it's a sensitive, we're talking about a sensitive subject. If, you know, if you are gay or lesbian or whatever, and you feel like you're sort of being pandered to, you can tell immediately. Where this was a real honest story about just because the kid's gay doesn't make him different than any of us, you know? And I think that that's what Greg tried to tell.
Yeah, I think that we notice that a lot, the lack of subtlety in movies where you very consciously feel the fact that you're being marketed to.
Yeah.
Like a think tank told you this stuff, and that's frustrating. Something we both loved about Love, Simon. Another thing you were in, something I really liked, was Call of Duty. You were in Call of Duty World War II. Oh. You did mocap and voice capture for it.
Yeah.
And I love, you're talking to a guy who's read like 20 Halo novels. I love video games.
He's read all the Halo books.
It's true. I'm a big video game guy. I just bought my PS5, actually. It's packed away. I have to bring it back to the city today, which will be fun.
Love it.
So I saw in an interview that you did about it where you said the writing in the game rivaled like any movie script you had read before. Yeah. And I think there's so many video games like that out there where they have like this expansive, great lore, but there's not that many great video game movies. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, because if you can't, there's something fully immersive about playing a video game that you can't possibly tell the same kind of a story. If you tell a great story while you get to be in the story, you can't possibly make a movie that makes you feel as connected, you know? Yeah. Because there's, you're when you're playing a video game and you're part of this really cool story, there's no way for anybody to just do the same thing in an hour and a half.
There just may never be a secret sauce for video game movies. It just may always be the case that they're just not, you just can't really make them. At least the level that people want to make them very successful, because you're never going to really have that interactive element, right? You know?
Yeah. I don't really know the answer to that, other than I just feel like there's a connection between people in these video games that they can't have in a movie. By the way, I'm about to start a new one with the same guys who made Call of Duty.
Oh, really? Which one? Can you say?
I can't really.
Nah, okay, that's fair. You know that there's a Call of Duty movie being made. You know, maybe you should. I mean, it's been rumored forever. I don't think they're even in production yet or anything. But, you know, maybe I'd love to see you get your toe in the water there. Maybe make some good video game movies.
Do you know what it's about? Is it? They go to so many.
They didn't say if it was World War II or if it was going to be modern set. I know that they just said that they were in early stages of like pre-production stuff about it. But this has been forever. It's been like 2 years of them saying they were going to make this movie and it never went into like full engage mode yet.
Before we wrap here, last thing. This will be something that you're not expecting.
Yes.
The timing of this interview is quite funny. So here at Barstool, we have this thing we do. It's called Stool Streams. People can watch and they can, it's a free to play like betting thing. And it's people in the office who play ping pong, cornhole, and now competitive big Jenga. And we have a league now within the office where our employees are competing for $10,000. And I'm one of the announcers. We have a whole announcing thing, a whole broadcast set up. And myself, one of my other coworkers came up with team names for everybody. And we joked, we said, hey, what if one of the teams was like fake, but we'll pretend they're a celebrity owned. And one of the teams is literally Josh Duhamel. Arguably one of the dumbest things that we've come up with, but little did you know you paid $0 to own a Jenga team.
I love that you guys are out there playing games at work. I'm not great at that. It's right up my alley, man. I mean, about it.
if for some reason we're still playing, which I'm sure will be when lockdown's over and you're not in Mexico City, feel free to stop in. And
I would love to. I would love to. I'm a big fan of Barstool, you guys. Seriously, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And hey, absolutely, November 24th, it's out on video on demand, DVD, and digital. I was like, what's the third one? It's obviously digital. Buddy Games.
By the way, we're also going to be in like, I think, you know, depending on the COVID the moving goalposts of COVID, 400 theaters around the country too. I just found that out 2 days ago, which is cool.
Yeah, I saw one in Plymouth. That's awesome.
Yeah, and we get to, for people to see this in the theater is really fun because it's such a communal laugh.
Yeah, and you can rent out theaters now too.
Yeah, true. So that's true. Buy the DVD and go rent it out. I do want to do. I want to rent out a theater, but that's the whole
thing. Like $100. It's like, 20 people, $100, you rent out an AMC theater. I'm all about that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the rest of your shoot there in that hotel. Hope you don't go too stir crazy.
All work and no play makes Josh a dull boy. All right.
Thanks so much, man.
Take care, man. Thank you.
Very funny guy. I expect him to be insightful, and he was. He's very, down to earth. He was talking to us the entire time from Mexico City Trail, and he was wearing like a backwards hat. He had like a cool beard, and he was just sitting there like very bro-y, like bro-ing out with us. It was nice.
He's just chill. Just chill dude. Loves vibes.
Yeah, he had very good vibes, I would say. He was very open about Michael Bay and a bunch of other stuff.
Good. I'm gonna listen to that, buddy.
All right. So the next
interviews I don't listen to, some I do.
Yeah, we actually did an interview today with an actress who I think everyone knows, and we have another interview that's even bigger coming up soon. So we have some good ones coming up.
All right. Before we move on, we are going to talk a little bit about Hawthorne. Whether you're treating yourself or shopping for someone on your list, finding the right holiday gift is never easy. But this holiday season, Hawthorne is making gift-giving fun and simple. Hawthorne is a premium, tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for you guys to feel and smell your best. You do a little quiz, they ask you questions like, what's your favorite drink, how do you spend a night out, do you smoke, and all these other things, and it basically helps factor out the results you get. They personalize everything, like you get certain shampoos, you get certain conditioners, you get certain hand cream, you get certain body wash or soap if you'd rather have bar soap instead. I use Hawthorne literally every day. It's amazing. It's really easy. The test was fast. The delivery was super fast. And it's personalized. And who doesn't love things that are personalized? It's a fun and convenient way to get super high quality products tailored specifically for men. Hawthorne even takes the risk out of it by giving you free shipping on your first order and returns. If you don't like their products, they'll even retailer them based on your feedback. So get special offers for the holidays going on right now by visiting hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne, HAWTHORNE.CO to check out their special holiday offers. Again, that's Hawthorne.CO.
Motherfuckers. So next thing up, On the Rocks, it's a movie review. It's a new movie review, which is kind of rare for us these days. On the Rocks, it is an A24 movie. Give you some background behind it. Let me just get the old synopsis. Give me a second. That's a long-ass synopsis. All right. It follows a daughter and father as they tail her suspicious husband. That had to be a better synopsis than that somewhere. I don't care. But that's basically the gist of it. It's from A24. It comes from Sofia Coppola. She directed it, produced it, and wrote it. Bill Murray, Rashida Jones, and Marlon Wayans are the three main stars. Again, like I said before, A24. It's an interesting movie. And I'll break down how I feel about it. It's very, very A24. It's a very A24 comedy drama, from like the setting to the style to the synthy music and the dialogue. And like, if that's not your thing, then buyer beware. And at first, I think it feels kind of formulaic. But that said, it definitely kind of keeps you on your toes in a sense. And I think most of that has to do with this like inherent mystery of the plot, and also like this, I don't want to say James Bondy, but kind of character that Bill Murray plays. And so from an acting perspective, I think that both Murray and Rashida Jones, they shine a lot in these normal, quiet moments of the movie. And Murray is very quick, super funny. He's great with his delivery, and that makes his character so much better. And Jones is great at just portraying a normal person, like with the same fears and anxieties as everyone else. Like, she's not acting over the top at any point. But I think when it comes to more emotionally heightened moments, I didn't really think that either of them were particularly great. But the plot is straightforward. It's not a ton of frills, no fancy lights or switches. And there's like kind of a beautiful simplicity to that. And I think the whole thing shot gorgeously, which makes it a lot of it better than it would have been. And overall, I think it's easy watch with some muted chuckles. And I don't know if I'd recommend it to anyone to rent it, but I'm very comfortable saying that it is a solid movie.
Yeah, I you know what, I really liked it. I give it about 75. It's not a perfect movie. It's a very enjoyable movie, and I don't think it promises much more than that. Certainly, like, I mean, if you look at you know, the filmography of Sofia Coppola, it's pretty interesting. Cause you know, like when you think about the expectations of like, you know, her going into a career, just, you know, with her father being Francis Ford Coppola and, you know, coming from a family that obviously has had some success in movies. And then immediately out the gate releasing Lost in Translation is, you know, that was like a pretty big deal when that came out, just in terms of, you know, people really enjoyed that back in 2003. And I really enjoyed Lost in Translation. And, you know, I don't think it's aged as well. I think there's been a lot of criticism in the past just because I think a lot of movies have done something similar, but it did seem like that sort of small scale yet, like, you know, I think that transplanted, like, I guess like people transplanted in an unfamiliar environment, but it mostly being just about like two characters seemed pretty fresh when I saw it when I was 20, and I enjoyed it. And then of course, you know, she's had some things since then, like Marie Antoinette with, like Kirsten Dunst in it.
Yeah. Right.
And so like I, in The Bling Ring, of course, which The Bling Ring, I thought was okay. I wasn't a huge fan of it. And I think it kind of got outsized publicity just based upon who was in it. You know, and I think most of that was just kind of Emma Watson, like what was she going to do post Harry Potter, but I thought it was fine. But I honestly, like what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring this back around where I did this, you know, I don't want to say it reminded me of Lost in Translation because Bill Murray is in it. And even though it has very little to do with that, but it's kind of like the stakes are kind of low in this movie. And I enjoyed that because ultimately what it is lighthearted, even though they're, you know, the going after the Dean character or whatever, or trying to figure that out. I mean, there is some stakes, but it's not like gigantic stakes. It's just nice to watch a movie and not have someone's life hang in the balance of something here and there. So yeah, like I had 75, I think it's super solid. In terms of performances, I thought Rashida Jones did an excellent job. And she's always, you know, I've always been a fan of Rashida Jones. I think she's super hilarious, both, you know, what most people probably know her for is The Office and in Parks Recreation, where she kind of is the straight man in some sense. But I think she does a good job in this role too. Like in one of my favorite roles actually is I Love You, Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She brings, you know, she always just brings like a presence to a movie, whether or not she's, you know, she's not outsized. It's not something that like overwhelms, but it is something that's there and it adds a lot to it. And I thought she did it here too. I thought Bill Murray was good. I think Bill Murray's always good. I think when Bill Murray wants to be good, he can be good. And I thought he was enjoyable in this. And I like Jenny Slate too. I think Jenny Slate's always solid. And so, Marlon Wayans, of course, like I thought everyone did really well. It's and I actually probably would recommend this just in terms of, you know, what's available right now. And you know, kind of like, you can like compare this to some of the trailers we watched with what was like Songbird or Mockingbird or whatever.
Songbird, yeah, the Michael Bay one.
Where it's kind of like it's nice. Like some of these things, it's nice to just remove yourself and just do this like little stupid. I don't know. It was not heist, right? It's kind of like a mystery caper track. What would you describe it?
It's hard to explain. I guess, well, comedy drama is the technical drama or technical category it's under, but it is like they're trying to solve a mystery, so to speak.
Yeah,
right.
They're trying to chase. I mean, they're trying to chase something down, but it's enjoyable from that sense in that it's an escape. It's an escape. That's probably the best way.
It's a vibe.
It's a 90 minute. Yeah, bro. Like Palm Springs was a vibe. This is a vibe. Mm-hmm. No, it's a 90 minute. It's a 90-minute enjoyable movie. It's well worth a watch compared to, you know, some of the other things we've reviewed this year. I don't know if it'll make a top list or whatever, but it's on the top of what we've talked about. Then unfortunately, there's not too much to talk about in terms of the content of the movie, unless you have a certain scene that you think like stood out or something specific.
There's not like a ton. Like scenes that stand out that vividly, and like I still enjoyed it. I gave it an 81, and it's funny because someone actually had I saw a tweet that was going around where someone said like, "Don't you love a movie that's just a vibe? Like, there's no real point to it. It's just a vibe," and like it's like an incorrect but also very correct statement. And I think this movie kind of applies to that, where like I'm watching it and I'm like, I'm not watching this movie, and I don't feel like I'm digesting it with a critical eye. I'm just enjoying the ride, right? And like I think I said it before, but like there is a beautiful sort of simplicity to the fact that they didn't try to go beyond a certain extent. Like it was just you were having fun and weren't, didn't feel like it was too long at any point. You didn't feel like it was too loud at any point. You didn't feel like it was too cheesy at any point. It was just a very, very smooth movie. And yeah, it was very beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I think the scene that kind of brought it home was like it was almost like the resolution scene of the second act or whatever. Not even the second act. I mean, just almost the resolution of the movie before the epilogue. But it was kind of the confrontation or whatever you want to call it between Laura and Felix for you know Felix cheating on her mom or whatever. And I thought that that kind of did a good job of playing back into the character and kind of the suspicion of the character and maybe some of the neuroses behind, you know, what they're going after, what they're trying to uncover.
Yeah. See, I didn't love that scene only because I don't think either of them were particularly good at these super emotional parts in this, but I do think that they excelled, specifically Rashida Jones, at playing normal. Like she is so good at playing a regular person. And I know that sounds like such an easy thing, but when people, especially like celebrities, they try to act like normal people, it comes off as so inauthentic. But like every time at any movie, show or whatever I've seen her in, she is just like, I could see that being a real person I interacted with. You know what I mean? I can't say the same with Bill Murray because like his presence is obviously so different at this point, like with all the movies and everything he's done and his cultural impact, where like I look at him and I'm like, that's never somebody I will interact with, right? It's a larger than life figure.
Yeah, I mean I get what you're saying. Like part of it is I kind of do feel like some of that was like way more how regular people get into conflict than say compared to like Marriage Story. Now I know people do shout at each other, right? It does happen, punch walls, that shit does happen, but like that was so, you know, we talked about that in terms of that, you know, being the Adam Driver Oscar reel scene or whatever, the one that became a meme. But, you know, a lot of people had feelings on that one being like the, you know, over the top. Whereas like I can see, you know, maybe if you think this one wasn't enough, I thought it was fine. But like there's a happy medium on conflict. I guess it just is kind of like where it fits in. I don't know. But that was kind of the stand up for me because like that was just like, I guess that like kind of nailed the characterization of Laura a little bit and the motivations behind it and brought it all home.
Yeah, I did enjoy a lot of it. The one thing that was unrealistic was the I would say kind of the background of the characters. It's like, okay, one of them, he's a big time app designer. The other one, she's a struggling writer and they live in the city in a big loft. It's like that shit feels to me very corny and cheesy and very, this was written by a bot. But at the same time, the sharpness of, again, the normalcy that Rashida Jones brings to the movie, it cuts through that. It cuts through that. Like, where any other actress, I would be like, this is a B-level romantic comedy bullshit. Like, I'm not interested in this. But like, it feels very, it's like authentically inauthentic. Like, it makes no sense. It's an art dealer, it's like bachelor, like dad coming to help a struggling writer in her loft and her app-making husband and see if they're cheating. But like, that should not feel real, but it does, and that is a huge win for that movie.
It's kind of funny that the app dealer thing is funny because I feel like that's a very like 2015
yes,
2016 like movie occupation, like The Intern, right? Like I forget,
yeah,
what was the job in The Intern, but wasn't like a fashion app or something? Was it like
Anne Hathaway was like running, it was like a boutique online store,
yeah,
right,
of some sort. But it's just like, it's like, that's kind of like the platonic, I keep saying platonic ideal, but that's like the ideal of like the mid 2010s, like sort of business. It's like upstart, young upstart, like hit people working for it. And that's what causes the, you know, the isolation of, or I guess like the, not the isolation, but the challenges of Robert De Niro's character getting into it. But then like in 2020 to have a movie come out,
where it's like the pathos of The Intern.
It's like, yeah, but like that fits in because like that's part of the point. But like here they could, like you just, oh, he's a, fuck it, he's an app designer.
Yeah.
Unless it fit into the plot somewhere that I'm forgetting, but like, I don't know.
What apps are left
to design? Like, I feel like that like apps were the gold rush and now anyone designing an app is just sifting donkey shit in the creeks of, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I know. I don't really understand that either. You can't make a success like Flappy Bird again.
Well, but it didn't distract from the movie. It's just funny, like, no. When you're writing a character, how you're just like, oh, he's a fucking app designer, I guess. Yeah,
he's talking about, like, yeah, we got great engagement on this. You know, you see this, so much social interaction. It's like,
He makes that app. He makes the app where you pull the pens as the Family Guy.
Yes, that was him. That was in the entire fucking time. He runs the pin pulling machine. That fucking asshole. He probably was cheating. Because that's the only way you can win that game, apparently. Otherwise, you instinctually pull the wrong ping and send him to lava.
You always drown the vaguely Seth MacFarlane-looking character.
But again, I guess that's what I mean, though, because you look at that on paper, and it shouldn't work, but it does. And I guess that's something to say about it. So 82 for me. Let me get my calculator. So would you give it a 75?
Yeah, so that should be a 78.5.
It's just 78. I even 81. Oh. Close enough. Unless I said 82 before. I don't remember. I'm comfortable with 81. So it's a 78. It's officially buttered between me and Tro. I don't know Jeff's score. I don't know the audience score because he didn't give me access to that doc. But as of right now, it's buttered. And I think it's going to stay buttered. I'm pretty sure the audience, you guys liked it from what I remember.
I can't see the audience not liking this. There's nothing not to like in this movie. It just doesn't.
Not to a point where it would drag it down below a 68 or whatever.
No. Is it a great movie? No. But I don't think it achieves. I don't think that's its aspiration. I think it exists to be fun. And it nailed it.
All right. So we're going to do the best Bills bracket soon. Oh, we could do it anyway, but I want to do the mailbag first. So I put out a quick call out for some mailbag questions.
Let's save the best Bills bracket.
You want to save and do it a different day?
Yeah. We should do mailbag because we can shoot the shit with the mailbag.
I was going to say we can flip a coin for the winners of mailbag if we disagree. And then just coin flip. It like adds an error of, I don't know, unpredictability to it. But we can save it. But maybe Let's do it only because the air of like the I don't know, I don't want the moment to be lost because we only just posted it today. You know what I mean?
Okay, we got it.
Best Bill. Okay, so but first we're gonna do the mailbag. The first question was, what is your favorite opening to a movie ever? You go first.
Oh, fuck. You go first? I don't get time to think about it.
I'll go first and it. You get asked this question a lot.
You read the questions beforehand.
I know. No, I read this an hour ago. So I know my answer because whenever I would do those walk and talk things for Instagram Live, we get asked a lot. My instinctual answer will always be Inglourious Basterds only because it's like a perfect, perfect opening scene. It establishes absolutely everything you need to know about the movie. Some of the best dialogue, some of the best suspense, some of the best, like, I don't know. I want to say just some of the best shots too. Like the scene where he pulls out the giant pipe, the scene where he's like looking out the window and Au revoir, Shoshana. It's such a perfect opening to a movie. I can't really think of one better than that. Do you have one in mind, Tro, or is the Google machine not working?
Yeah, I'm definitely Googling it. That's what's happening right now. God, you know, like it's one of those things where you just almost want to say Goodfellas, but it's so cliche. Mm-hmm. It's like the, you know, the
great
nerd,
opening line.
It's like the nerd top five on IMDb where it's Goodfellas, The Dark Knight, like Inception, all those other movies. I will say, like, you know, maybe like Goodfellas is my favorite because I think that does such a great job of setting the tone. But let me tell you, the opening scene is actually like when I think of opening scenes in a movie, I always think of Scream. Because
really,
yeah, because that does such like I think that's perfect because one you take like Drew Barrymore, right, like in 1995, you know, she kind of like had some ups and downs, right? Like, you know, she went on Letterman and flashed Letterman and all that stuff, and she was known as a wild child and a party girl for a while, and then, you know, I think she was probably what, like 25 and 95, so she had a lot of like notoriety and a lot of fame, and it set the tone for this movie because that was Drew Barrymore, right? And it was like she was a big name being killed off in this opening scene of the movie, which then set the stage for the rest of the movie. But like that the whole like phone call and the Jiffy Pop thing was so iconic. Like he's iconic again, but it is like when I think of like opening scenes, I always think of Scream because it's like, it's self-contained, but it connects to the rest of the movies. Cause obviously it kicks off the whole thing, but self-contained in the sense that like, that was, you know, that was our first connection to the character. And then she just got killed off. And because it was Drew Barrymore, like it was kind of a big deal.
I actually love that pick. The more I'm thinking about it, the more you explain it. No, that's actually great.
I just want to throw up one that's like not cliche, right? Because like, okay, Goodfellas is Goodfellas, right?
So is Inglourious Basterds, man. It's tough not to be a cliche. They're good for a reason, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's tough being an idiot who doesn't like know like classic film all that much too.
Yeah, I'm not picking Citizen Kane. Sorry, I'm just gonna watch Mank. Much better than Citizen Kane already.
Citizen Dank. Just rolling up.
Citizen Mank. It doesn't even, you're just Rose, combining two movies.
Rosebud.
Making the mayor's speech. Legalize it. The next question. What was your favorite sports memory from college? I feel like you actually have one, so I'll let you go first.
Oh boy. Okay. So sports memory that I was at in person was probably, I was at the Purdue Wisconsin, Big Cat was at this game too, but, the Purdue Wisconsin game in West Lafayette, and then Purdue ended up losing that one, but that was a huge game. Like Purdue was, I think, 5 at the time and Wisconsin was like 6 or 7. And so there was a lot riding on the game. You know, came down to you know, big fumble and some events that happened in there. But just in terms of that, like that being nationally televised and having so much stakes and being at it, like the energy was phenomenal. My favorite sporting thing that happened when I was in college was the Colts beating the Patriots in the 2006 season, 2007 calendar year AFC yeah. championship game.
Yep, I would imagine.
What about you?
Damn. I think for me, the best energy time, it was a series of days. So my freshman year of college was 2011, and it was Linsanity because all my friends at Manhattan College were raving Knicks fans. And we would all huddle in one person's room, and we'd pack out the room, and we would all be watching Jeremy Lin. This is after the second game, but specifically, I remember there was the game against the Lakers when it was – this was like shoulder to shoulder. We're all sitting there watching Jeremy Lin, and he puts up like 40 points – and like, I don't even know, what was like 12 assists or something crazy like that. They beat the Lakers. It was one of the craziest fucking things I think I've ever experienced, just energy wise. And like they had, like Manhattan had a lot of games in that, like they're really good at basketball, but basically nothing else. But like they had a lot of games that are big. They played, they got into the tournament in, I want to say it was like 2015 and lost to Louisville. And they're good, but it was never matched the energy of Linsanity ever again. It was the craziest in-person quote-unquote thing I had ever been a part of as a sports, just a general sports fan. I wasn't even a Knicks fan. That was amazing.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun, right? Because I don't know much about the NBA, right? But from my experience watching the NBA, I love it when an undrafted player goes off or has a streak. Because I feel like even though, you know, it's more common for first-round picks to bust out in the NFL, like it is more common for undrafted players to like have 2 to 3 year stretches of success in the NFL. And it's really NBA, cool. In the NFL, but like, I feel like you almost never see like an NBA player just go off while also being undrafted in the same way, like Jeremy Lin went off. So that was like a really cool story. And then, you know, obviously like kind of, you know, I've had friends, you know, Asian American friends talk about like just how cool it was to have that representation in the NBA. And I think it was cool for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah. And it was just, I think Knicks fans too were just so despondent at that point because I think Carmelo was hurt. Stoudemire wasn't really playing up to par. So like the dream team they had put together was just like kind of garbage. They had like Mike Bibby, I think, in the team at that point. And I think maybe even, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. He's the Nets legend. He's like leader, second all time in assists. Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was on that team, I think. There was a lot of very washed up. Kurt Thomas, I think, was on that squad.
No.
Like it was a very old and washed up team, with the exception of Carmelo and at the time, at least Stat. But yeah, it was an amazing moment. Next question was Marshalls or TJ Maxx?
Oh, TJ Maxx.
You think so? Far.
They're the same company. But yeah, TJ Maxx is, I find better stuff at TJ Maxx. I haven't been in either for a while. And part of that, most of that's due to just not shopping much during COVID out and about. But yeah, like Marshall's, or I guess like, I feel like TJ Maxx is more plentiful in my life than Marshall's has been. I don't know if it's like a regional thing or whatnot.
My experience with them has been that TJ Maxx was slightly classier than Marshall's. Like Marshall's is very dirty, but I've never found deals as good at TJ Maxx as I have as Marshall's. And I don't know why that makes sense, but like I've been to TJ Maxx probably as many times as I've been to Marshall's, but I always get better deals at Marshall's.
Dude, I was over in London in 2012, like right, I'm not trying to brag. It's like one of the two times I've been overseas. But I was like walking down the street and I see this sign, it's TJ Maxx, but I look clear, it's TK Maxx. They have to change
what?
It. They have to change it there, I guess, you know, due to trademarks or whatever, but it's TK Maxx in London. And that was like the ultimate, that felt like that was just, it was an out of body experience just seeing that TK Maxx logo.
Do you know what I found out today actually, is that they don't call it G.I. Joe in Great Britain. They call it Action Man.
Really?
The American GIs save their ass and they rename them Action Man? What bullshit is that?
I mean, GI has no meaning, right? In Britain, right? They'd have something else.
I mean, they know what GIs are. GIs were stationed in England forever. They should have an idea. It sounds better than Action Man. That sounds like NyQuil Jordan shit.
Action Man does sound like a British superhero. Like it's Action Man, Pip Pip. He's here.
He do Pip Pip Diddly Do, Action Man.
He looks like Prince William.
Just like the biggest lad you've ever seen. Just like a bean-shaped head, pasty white, red cheeks.
Yeah,
tiny mouth, no lips.
He's got that Mountbatten like
past.
Yeah, it's like all the Mountbatten men fall apart once they turn 35.
Yes. He's got the Wayne Rooney head type.
Because Prince, I think Prince Philip used to be handsome, and then Prince Andrew used to be a heartthrob back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Or no, maybe not Prince Andrew, the other, whatever.
Whichever one like ran away, I believe.
We're which one it was. Legally barred from talking about Prince Andrew on this podcast.
But yeah, no, I agree. But still, that's bullshit, dude. I'm sorry. You can't rename them Action Man. But yeah, so anyway, I think Marshall's, just because I've found better. I actually went there recently. I got a Tommy Hilfiger. I don't know anything Tommy Hilfiger except for this now. It's like an oversized color block windbreaker. It's awesome. Ooh. Regular price was $155. I got it there for $35. $100 off. It's only a season old.
Dude, I like back in 95 when Tommy Hilfiger was like super hot, I had this big orange Tommy Hilfiger puffer coat. So sick.
Fuck yes. I want to get one of those now. I'm like obsessed with color block now.
Do it, dude. Go get one of those big North Face Nupse jackets.
I've been fighting with merch forever to get two things on the LCB store. One of which is a color block windbreaker. It was a windbreaker. So it was a windbreaker, color block windbreaker, and a, I think it was a yellow and black camo. I don't know if it was a jacket or a shirt, but it looked really cool. The design I put together was awesome. And they're just like, yeah, we'll get back to you. Never heard back. But it's a work in progress.
I still want like an official LCB quarter zip, like a nice Peter Millar one that like I kind of want to rip off the golf course in Georgia. Their whole vibe with the green and then like a flag coming out of a movie reel. It's kind of like, it doesn't even say, it's like, it's just an, if you know, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then people are like, where'd you get that? And it's like, well, you can only buy the merch if you go to the movie event.
You need to go to the office and ask. The other thing I thought
was like the first time I'd interact with anyone there and be for them to do me a favor. Look, I don't. You don't. Sure. You don't know who I am. I've never talked to you ever. but I need a Peter Millar quarter zip with my podcast logo on it.
ASAP. The only other cool one I've made so far that I haven't been able to get made is it was a full black windbreaker, and it was like almost Blade Runner font. On one arm it said lights, and then the other arm it said camera. And then it said in the same Blade Runner font on the chest, like the full lights, camera, barstool. And it was in gold. The writing was in gold. The windbreaker was black. It looked fucking awesome. So working on that.
What if we do another Big Dog shirt that's like, it's him sitting down a toilet to pee, and it's like, yeah, I sit down to pee. So what?
Is he listening to AirPods still?
And he's wearing a crown, and he's like, this is my throne.
No, my porcelain throne.
Yeah, like king, all kings sit on their throne.
Yes. Your mom kept it warm for me.
It's
like, what are you implying, Big Dog? Did my mom poops?
Big baggy pair of denim touching the floor.
He's how about the same thing, except it's him taking his pants off to pee at the urinal? Like, his pants are on his ankles.
You ever see that though in a stall where somebody's like pulling their pants down and like a lot of the fabric materials touching the floor, and they're not just doing the thing to like prevent the pants from touching the floor? It's like you got to pull the pants down, and you got to pull your legs taut so the pants don't slouch down and touch the floor completely.
You do like a wide stance, almost like a gyno appointment.
Yeah.
It's the move. You can't not, but when they, I've seen that before many times, you see the jangle, and then you see like the waistline touching the piss covered floor. It's like, have you never been in a men's room before? You know, there's piss on that floor.
So much piss on that floor.
All right. The next question was, how did you all meet? If we've answered it before, but I feel like it's just good for a refresher. Me and Jeff had both interacted with you, I think independently, when you were still posting a lot on the old Twitter. So me and Jeff and then also connected independently because we had always talked about doing a Star Wars podcast. And at the time, I was working a real job. Jeff was at GMA, and I was also interning for Pardon My Take. And we got together because we said maybe one day we can actually make it into a real thing and bring it to Barstool because we're both Barstool fans, obviously, since I worked there. We did our first pod in the last, I think almost last second, you agreed to come on and do it for Star Wars, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk Star Wars.
And we were only ever going to talk about Star Wars. We didn't want to do a general movie pod at first. Yeah, and you came on, I was doing it. We did it together in Jeff's apartment, in his office. And I bought a Snowball mic for $20 off Amazon. And we just passed it back and forth while we were talking. And I think, I don't even remember how we were fucking recorded it. I think I recorded on my computer on YouTube and the, not YouTube, no, GChat, Google Hangouts. And we recorded it, put it out, and it worked. And we were like, why don't we just make it more broad? We don't have to narrow ourselves down to Star Wars. If we talk about movies, we can just also talk about Star Wars. So it all worked out.
Yeah. I mean, and it was good for me because it was a tough time in my life. Not like bad, right? But just like, you know, it was one of those things where I was working a lot, and like I didn't really have like any hobbies because I was working, and it was like chatting with you guys was like the only fun outlet I had for my otherwise like unenjoyable. Thankfully I'm doing something different now, so I'm much happier. But it was a lot of fun. You know, I enjoy it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember anymore. It just feels like we've always been buddies on the internet for some reason.
Yeah, and we've literally talked to each other every day for like 3 years now over that. It's crazy. last question was, would a Baby Yoda heel turn be bigger than the Hogan going to NWO? I think it would be worse. It'd be even bigger heel turn.
Oh, it would be... Yeah, it'd be the disrespect a Baby Yoda heel turn would have for the general brand and what they built in Star Wars, I would admire it so much. It would be as subversive as Star Wars would ever get if Baby Yoda just fucking upped and started like throwing force lightning at the Mandalorian at the end of season 3 or whatever. But they've got too much money tied into that cute Baby Yoda merchandise now. I mean, obviously that's not like, obviously, you know that would never happen. I'm not trying to argue against that, whether or not it's going to happen. It's not going to happen. But it would be amazing. it would be bigger than Hulk Hogan NWO.
Although, great clip. The clip of them when they turn, just getting pelted. It was a Kevin Nash, him, and oh my God, the guy with the cool hair. Fucking, oh, what's his name? You know,
Scott Hall.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Razor Ramon. And the scene of the gym getting pelted with, like, the fucking, like, drink things and food and everything, just, like, not even giving a shit. It's unreal. That's one of my favorite wrestling clips to go back and watch. And then I'm trotting them out in the first time with NWO gear is also great.
Man, I have something. I will go back and watch old wrestling clips on YouTube. I mean, I know I'm not alone in doing this, but there's something about just – searching up 10 loudest pops in wrestling history.
Yes. and like, watching it on the WWE official account, like not even like,
it's like number 10, and it's like grainy old footage from like 1999 where Steve Austin's driving the Zamboni out to the ring or whatever. Oh, it's just so fun. I think the product's worse now. Like I do. I don't think it's horrible, but I think part of it's just like I've obviously gotten older, and it wasn't as cool as it was when it was 15 to me. But I would have a hard time telling you that if I were 36 in 1998, that I wouldn't be into Stone Cold and The Rock, because I'm pretty sure I would. It was that fun to watch.
It's an event. It's literally like wrestling is essentially a drama. It's extremely fun to watch. And I think people, they take it too seriously sometimes, like their view of wrestling fandom. They're like, oh, you always know it's fake, right? Like, yeah, no shit. But it's very fun to watch. There's dramatic arcs to it.
Yeah.
Fucking McMahon got blown up in a limousine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the issue with, like, talking about wrestling now is, you know, like part of the fun of the discussion for a lot of people is the business side of things. And it's no different from like talking about anything else, right? Like where, like, mm-hmm. you know, part of the fun of talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is like the release schedule and the strategy and like what they're going to do next and all that stuff. So like, I get that, but like wrestling's one of those things where like, I can never get in the conversation. Cause like, I actively do not give a shit about the business side of things. Like I just, mm-hmm. I want to see some fucking bulked up himbos clothesline each other and then like drink a bunch of beer.
It's incredible every time. All right. So I'm going to give you two options and tell me what you want to do. We can do the Bills.
Let's do the Billy draft. Let's do the Billy draft.
Let's do the Bills draft. I was going to say we can do that or we can do 90s trivia.
We promised a bill. We promised a Bill draft, and we're going to, you know, let's give them the Bill draft. But do we have the tiebreaker? Did the audience vote on that?
If they did, I don't have access to the doc, so we're going to have to do the coin flip for a tiebreaker.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. That's what you were saying earlier. All right. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. Cool. Let's do it. All right.
What's the bracket again that I created?
Here, I'll copy it and send it to you. But the first matchup in the best Billy bracket. Oh man, we didn't even do what's his name from, the Righteous Gemstones, Uncle Baby Billy.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the problem with doing this bracket so quickly is it's literally just the first things that I don't know why I did that.
Yeah.
The first things that pop into my head.
Well, you know, that's the simplicity of it. Okay. So I just sent it to you. The first matchup in the acting Billy section of the division, I guess.
Actual Billy Joel.
Yeah. Actual Billy. My mistake. Actual Billy's is Billy Joel versus Billie Eilish. It's really, really hard not to pick Billy Joel.
It's Billy Joel. I mean, like, look, I think Billie Eilish is great. I love Billie Eilish's music. I think she's like one of the few artists that, you know, the young artists that like make music now that like I can listen to, and it doesn't like make me, what's that like old meme where it's like, yes, dear. It doesn't like turn me into that old, like shriveled up meme when I hear it. But you know, Billie Eilish, like, come back to this bracket when you've been doing this for 50 more years. Because Billy Joel's the student of Billy Joel's a legend. He's a legend.
Long Island legend.
I'm not even from Long Island. I'm not even from New York. So I don't fully understand I like Billy Joel, but I don't fully understand the appreciation, the level of love that certain New Yorkers have for Billy Joel. But scenes from an Italian restaurant. However you pronounce restaurant.
Yeah, pronounce it the right way when you're doing Billy Joel talk.
I mean, when it comes back to that, like, that orchestra part at the end, just comes back full circle. Oh, there's no better moment in Billy Joel's catalog than that. He easily wins this one.
Yeah, maybe talk to us again in, like, I don't know, 50 years might be different. But Billy Joel is a special place in my heart, especially as a Long Islander. So he's an easy advance. Next up is Billy Zane versus Billy Ray Cyrus. Start with this one. I don't know yet.
I don't know. I didn't know they did number 16 versus number 15 matchups right off the bat in this tournament. this is tough. I don't know why I picked both of these. I'm going to probably, you know, Billy Zane's had a very solid career. He's had a very solid career. Unfortunately, I don't think that Billy Zane has had quite the cultural impact as Billy Ray Cyrus did just off of one song he had in the early 90s with Achy Breaky Heart. What Billy Ray Cyrus was able to do with that one hit and then turn it into, like, essentially an empire is impressive. So I got to put Billy Ray Cyrus. And no offense to – if Billy Zane's listening, Billy Zane, I love you. I liked you in Zoolander and all that. But
listen to your friend Billy Zane. That's a great line.
Yeah. Lord. What was that movie where he's, like, in and he's kind of doing the, like, it was like a very self-referential.
Where he played Billy Zane, right? And he was like an asshole. I know what you're talking about. Huh. We'll look it up. He's in a lot of weird movies, actually, like a lot of very low budget, shitty looking movies. And I respect Chasing the Bag. That's the Billy Zane motto. But damn, what was the name of that movie? The Kill Hole? No.
He was in The Boys. Was it The Boys?
Yeah, that's right. So he was in a video, like a co-star of one of the characters, because they do, like, movies in The Boys.
Yeah. I feel like I'm thinking of something else. I don't know. It'll come to me.
No, I know what you're talking about. I remember him playing, like, I vividly remember him playing a fictionalized version of himself in something.
Oh, it was Zoolander. Fucking, you know what it was?
What?
It was Holmes and Watson.
Oh.
That was when we said that was the only solid gag in that entire movie.
Fuck, man. How did you remember that? I would have never remembered that.
I actually had to go back to his filmography. That was what it was. That was the only solid gag in that entire movie.
God damn, dude. So, actually, that you're swaying me now towards Billy Zane. I was initially going to say Billy Ray Cyrus all the way, mostly because I agree with you. His cultural impact is insane.
Say Billy Zane, and let's let the coin decide.
Yeah, you know what? Let's do that. We're going to do that. Let's let the coin design. Billy Zane's got the bigger head, so he gets heads.
Okay. Yeah, Billy Zane does get heads, baby.
That's right. And it is tails.
That's Billy Ray Cyrus. Billy Zane.
Cyrus wins. All right. And now we're going to move down to the open Billy bracket. Very first one is going to be Billiards versus Billboards Outside Ebbings, Missouri. And parentheses 3.
The way I phrased that was so stupid. I got to go Billiards. Billiards has been around a long time. It's fun to play. It's one of those things that you think you're going to be better at before you step to the table and actually do it. And then you do it and you're like, I'm not really having fun anymore. But if you're with the right people, it can be a lot of fun. So I got to give it to Billiards. I like 3 Billboards, but, you know, pool is a fun game. Billiards is fun.
I agree. 3 Billboards, very good movie. Great Sam Rockwell role, although many people have consistently pointed out that he likes to play the good racist in a lot of movies. Billiards, though, I agree with you. When you're playing with the right people, like you're playing with people who are also bad at billiards, just say pool. We're just going to say pool. When you're bad at people that are with people who are also like around the same skill level, it is very fun. And I think that electronic pool, like playing pool apps, like on, I guess, like Game Pigeon or whatever for iPhone, it has really brought back my desire to play pool. So I'm going with Billiards. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
So next up, we got crazy stories about Bill Murray.
Not Bill Murray himself. It'd be too easy if it was Bill Murray himself, because especially if we had the audience vote in there, that's why I phrased it that way. But I'm still gonna have to put the crazy stories about Bill Murray ahead of I've never had fun at a Build-A-Bear. I've never been the right age, but I've taken my daughter in there. And keep in mind, pre-pandemic, she didn't really even know what was going on. It's just, it's not a fun experience.
I will give it to the crazy stories about Bill Murray as well. And I can't give it to Build-A-Bear. I've never even been in one. I've only ever watched the commercials when I was younger. And I thought, this isn't for me. Like, I'm not really a stuffed animal type of person. And that's not to say no one is, because obviously almost everyone is. But it's just, it would never checked a box for me personally. So I easily have to take the crazy Bill Murray stories, which gave me enjoyment for at least 3 seconds.
I could see being four or five, Build-A-Bear would be a lot of fun, but you know, nothing beats a good story about Bill Murray hopping behind a bar and serving people tequila shots. And then him saying, they'll never believe this.
No, none of your friends will ever believe you.
And Bill Murray showing up, you know, outside of the line.
Dude, I saw him at Senior Frogs. I swear to God.
You know, Bill Murray was in line for Black Friday at Walmart, and he bought everyone a 55-inch Roku TV in line and said, "Shh, they'll never believe this."
Bill Murray trampled my 6-year-old daughter trying to get to a brand new Xbox One.
Keep calm.
And he said, "No one will ever believe you."
It's Chive On.
All right, well, we're on to this.
You ever seen Chive On to Float On by Modest Mouse?
No, I can't say I have. No.
And we'll all chive on, okay. And I like the one he's like, I back my car into a caca.
Why don't you try it with Dream On instead?
Chive on. Every time that I keep coming, chive on. Saturdays for the boys when I drive home.
I blame the English for that too, because the keep calm thing was a very British thing. So Action Man and Chive On, two fucking strikes for you. Fucking crumpet eating assholes. All right, final four. First matchup, Billy Joel versus Billy Ray Cyrus. The easiest win in history. Billy Joel wins.
This is 102-4 right here. I got a feeling Billy Joel's taking this bracket, my friend.
This matchup, it's weird because like, if you consider all of the impact Billy Ray Cyrus has had, including his daughter and the show, it still isn't a blip on my personal radar compared to Billy Joel. And that's no disrespect to Miley Cyrus, who is an amazing singer in her own right. Definitely way better than her dad ever was.
Miley Ray Cyrus,
yeah.
He gave himself a little homage to himself in that name there.
Yeah, you know, well. It's just like his old man. I think she started doing this too. We talked about it on radio. Wait, did we talk about it on LCB too?
Yeah,
she did the Fleetwood Mac covers. They're so good. Her and Stevie Nicks, incredible combo. Next up, Billiards versus the crazy stories about Bill Murray. I don't know.
Let's let the coin decide.
Let's flip for this one.
Yeah, whatever you pick, opposite. Let the coin decide, because this is a toss-up for me.
Billiards has heads, and Bill Murray has heads.
A plus for Billiards is like when you get too drunk to play with the actual stick, and then you just take the cue ball and start throwing it at the other balls.
Oh my god, it's the best feeling. You're just sitting there and just rolling them around. Did you have a friend who had a pool table?
Yeah, and you just roll the balls around when you're drinking. Like, you don't even play. I mean. That's an option. You know what? I'm voting for Billiards. You're voting for Bill Murray. Let's see what the coin says.
I had a friend, Adam. I know he's listening. He had a pool table at his house. That's exactly the situation that would happen. We'd play for like 5 minutes, and then like Anchorman later, we'd be sitting there with the fucking the ball trying to get in the corner all the way across with my hand. Like, damn, that shit was sick. You see that?
Lost my virginity on that green felt that day.
All right, we're gonna give Bill Murray heads and Billiards tails. It's tails.
Bill Murray.
Incredible advance. No, it's Billiards.
Oh, it's
advances.
Okay.
Bill Murray had heads. All right, so this is such a very shitty championship round. It's Billy Joel versus Billiards.
Billy Joel walks this one. We need to end the pod with a Billy Joel song. What do you say?
We're going to end it with – which one are we going to end it with?
Well, what's your favorite Billy Joel song? What about Moving Out? That's a good one.
That's a good ending pod song. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. No, Billy Joel wins this one. Honestly, I could have done a better job with this bracket. I left a bunch of bills on the table, like you're saying. It could have been the Buffalo Bills in here. I didn't think too hard. I just went with the first things that come to my mind. Sometimes that results in very lopsided brackets because my mind doesn't work like a normal person's mind.
I'm not ever going to complain about Billy Joel winning a competition on these airwaves. That's a win to me.
I just
think we're going to
– I just wish I had Billy Joel's goatee. Just the goatee.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful – it's maybe one of the most perfect goatees that has ever been grown.
It looks like steel wool, like that's been sheared. It's so like metallic and sharp. I love it so much.
I'm not a huge goatee guy, but like for some reason the goatee works for him.
I think it's maybe just not having hair. I don't really know though.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's a gorgeous man. Gorgeous voice.
Uptown girl. All right.
All right, we're gonna end the pod.
Put this one in the can. Jeff.
Yeah, we hope you're Jeff doing will well. Be back soon. Yeah, he's not sick. He's just doing the NBA draft.
No, dude, he's laying at the floor at the Omaha, Nebraska Apple store.
Oh yes. Sorry.
His barber's flying in to give him a little shape up before he gets off the ground to make sure nobody sees the back of his head.
All right. Jeff will be back on Sunday's episode. I am Ken Jack. This is Trill. All of us.
Fuck.
Do it.
Have a good week at the box office.